둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Looks like you got a lot of toys there.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here for checking out the episode. Please do hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around. You get three new interviews sent to you every single week, just like this one. New one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can grab us Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Of course, we've had some fantastic guests on lately, including Maren Morris, Susanna Hoffs from the Bengals, Adele, Hank Azaria, the many voices of The Simpsons, amongst his many movie roles and TV roles. We got to talk about his new Bruce Springsteen tribute band. I talked with the cast and creative teams behind Citadel Deanna and Citadel Honey Bunny, including Samantha and Matilda De Angelis. Suzanne Vega was here, Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins, Sting. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith, today talking with legendary actor Martin Cove. We reflect on his 50-year acting career, from the early roles in classic TV series like Gunsmoke, Rockford Files, and Walker, Texas Rangers, to his iconic portrayal of John Kreese in The Karate Kid and Cobra Kai. Martin's going to share some stories of his friendships with industry legends, his dedication to the Western genre, and his evolution from tough guy roles to more emotionally complex characters. He highlights his pride in how John Kreese has grown over Cobra Kai's six seasons, especially as we get into the final halves of this final season. We'll explore the themes of redemption and vulnerability, and he's going to reveal his excitement for some upcoming projects as well, including a Western comic series aimed at inspiring new heroes for today's generations. And we're also going to talk about his very first role in a comedy, Carrying a Couch for Rhoda. All that and more as we discuss Cobra Kai on Netflix. It's Kyle Meredith with Martin Cove.
That was funny. That was the first comedy I ever did in this town. I think it was 1974. And I remember it was a scene where I come on to her and I'm bringing her a new couch. And I think her show had just spun off. That's why she was moving. Had just spun off from Mary Tyler Moore. And it was a lot of fun. She was great. We stayed friends for a long time. Valerie Harper, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah. I just went and rewatched it. I was looking at your filmography and just like, you know, obviously, you've got the parts that you're known for, but just seeing like you have had a spot on every incredible show, especially throughout the 70s and 80s. I mean, I was looking at Gunsmoke, Kojak, Rockford Files, Charlie's Angels, Incredible Hulk, Barnaby Jones, Starsky and Hutch, Chips, Cagney and Lacey, Twilight Zones, Walker, Texas Ranger, Into the 90s. Like, That's nuts, man. Like you, that's everything right there. That's
Well, I've learned this one thing. They're doing a book on me, and I never thought I was book worthy because I think Sean Connery is book worthy, Marlon Brando, Peter O'Toole. I said, Martin Cove. And, 6 months ago, they said, nope, you're in the business 50 years, you're a survivor, you've done all these things. And they had gone back to the fourth grade in Brooklyn when I did a play and got hooked on acting. And what I learned from these people with all their research is we as actors forget about our accomplishments of the past, like these shows you're talking about. And I go to the occasional Comic-Con and someone will come to me with five pictures of me with James Garner from Rockford Files, like five scenes. And they watch the show and they freeze framed. And you look at all that, and it takes someone else to tell you about your accomplishments because I think we as artists always look forward. We're always looking for the next gig. Or if we're working on a movie, we're doing backstories and we're doing all kinds of stuff. And you just forget about the past. I remember and doing this book 2 hours a day with this fellow, it's incredible. I think back to some of the struggles and the stories and how much I love guys like James Garner. And my first movie was directed by Alan Arkin, Little Murders, and my scene was cut out, my first speaking part. And I remember never didn't I didn't get depressed because Alan Arkin sent me a letter saying you did a wonderful job. This is 1970. And he said, you did a wonderful job, but the Elliot Gould is a pacifist and he can't kill you like he does with the scene in the park. And I accepted that. He said, but you did a great job. And that, over the years, I would bump into Alan Arkin or Adam Arkin, his son, and we'd laugh about Marty Cove being struggling in Central Park, being killed by Elliot Gould with a camera. And then all of a sudden, Cagney Lacey, Karate Kid, but all the other stuff, So I think that it's really interesting to look back on some of this work and real you appreciate the struggle then, and you appreciate your position in life now with a greater level of gratitude. I think it happens. And until you look at that, it takes someone like you to say, hey, you did this show, that show. Sure, there are stories, crazy stories about each one of those. Did you like working on one more than the other? Sure. But they were all lots of fun. Did I make enemies? When I did Walker, Texas Ranger, I knew more about the West than any of those guys. They turned a one episode show into a 2 hour show. And the director was Tony Mordente. Tony Mordente was one of the original Jets on Broadway in West Side Story. And he's directing Walker, Texas Ranger. And I knew it because I was a nutcase for Broadway stuff. And he was one of the original Jets. And with it just blew me away, And they didn't know anything about Westerns. And I would throw around too much information because they knew a lot about contemporary Westerns. Because vis-a-vis, that's what Walker was. But they didn't know a lot about, masks and it's just the whole deal, shooting fast draw. And I did. And I made a lot of enemies on that set. I was never asked to come back because too many people said, Marty Cove thinks he knows all these answers. He thinks he's the Western Maven, You make enemies and you have a good time. It's one of those things.
And we'll be right back right after this.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings
Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Martin Cove.
All those shows, and that's not even all of them, right? Like, I just cherry-picked out there. Like, that couldn't have been normal. But to have the kind of career that you've had, where you've been able to glimpse the imaginary world of all these iconic, you know, shows, and then land yourself one of the great iconic roles, which most actors, they never get that, you know? Like you either get one of the thing, you get the role and that's all you're ever seen for and you get nothing else, or you get the other thing and you never get the big thing, you know, but you somehow found them both, you know, through your talents out there. I mean, in, you know, when Karate Kid landed, to see how that's played out, to get to go six seasons extra with that character now in Cobra Kai. I mean, what has that been like? Because he could have been left back there in the 80s and 90s, and that wasn't the case.
Real interesting question. Good question. You know, I think about that a lot because you, again, as an artist, always have other things you want to do. I'm working. I have a comic book that's about an old gunfighter who bonds with a 12-year-old kid, and they're in search of the bad guys. My son, who ostracized me from the gang. And we learn, we share values back and forth, and we understand each other's point of view and moral fiber and all that. And I want to get that into a series and all, because I don't think kids today have any heroes. I don't think kids today have Eastwood and John Wayne, and, you know, they have Marvel comic books, and it's all based on sci-fi, you know, it's not based on heart and vulnerability, you know. So I really want to leave that as a legacy, and I want the genre of the West. Nobody does it better than Kevin or Taylor Sheridan, you know. The legacy of the West was what we were brought up on. Back in the 60s, I remember 35 Westerns on primetime television. In the 60s, 35 Westerns, and they were all about heroes. And I don't think the kids today have that. And I think there's a lot of unrest out there and a lot of questions that parents have. I go around, I do a lot of anti-bullying stuff, you know, and the amount of attention I get is the ultimate bully that people like to get motivational speeches by. They like to get congratulations on your Haftorah that you're getting bar mitzvah. I get cameos coming in from priests who want me to do a motivational speech to their congregation so they'll buy things in the silent auction of the congregation. I mean, the most bizarre things that come at this character, when he started out to be just John Kreese in the movie, and I wasn't interested in reproducing that. And when I signed on the series, I said, you guys got to write me with an arc and vulnerability and changing colors. And I don't care if you go up and down, up and down, up and down. You got to give me the colorful aspect of this character, his emotional position. And they did. And it really is big time in this season. And I can't give away too much, but it really goes in that direction. And I'm happy to do that because I'd rather cry on camera than beat someone up, you know? And yet I come from a whole background of being the tough guy, you know? So it's interesting to look back on your original question. It's interesting to look back on that. But the character has evolved so much into a hero to so many people, where it started off as like no mercy, sweep the leg, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, just win the tournament, Johnny Lawrence. It's now evolved into a love affair with Johnny Lawrence, you know. And it's very exciting. Because that's what I like to play, is a vulnerability, contrary to what I supposedly got famous for, you know?
We see that, like, especially in the first part of this final season, like the cave scenes, like that's some heavy drama that we get to see you in, you know, as you're sort of out of your mind. But I finished the second part too. And again, like you, without giving too much away, what we start seeing towards the end of the second part here, you know, I had Jacob on couple weeks ago, you know, talking about the Hawk in a similar way, and you realize that, you know, if your character sticks around long enough on this show, you get some sort of redemption, you know, in some sort of way. And Kreese is one of those guys. The entire time I've wondered, it's like, I don't know what's going to happen in part three yet. I have no clue. But you got to wonder, is like, can this guy, does he have it in him for actual redemption, for actual change? Like, we've seen his backstory, which has been great, you know, finally getting a little bit of that, learning where the vulnerability comes from. But like, not knowing what happens here, like, even beyond this fictional show in its fictional future, like, can this guy, does this guy have it in him to be, you know, the good guy?
Well, I mean, without giving away too much, he does. And those are the moments that are rich as actors, as I like to play. Some people like to play, you know, hard nose. I've done that. Did it in Rambo, did it in Wyatt Earp, did it in Karate Kid 1, 2, and 3. And, you know, I like to vary it. And right now, with my kids growing up and my son, who's a wonderful, wonderful actor, you know, I just produced a movie about him becoming the best gunman that makes a deal with the devil and to be the best gunman in the West. And it was a little movie, you know, and he's brilliant in it. That kind of activity, and with my daughter, Rachel's a life coach, and she's in the movie. I got her music in the movie. There's a lot of pride, and there's different values now shifting. You know, it's shifting. And you have a couple of grandkids and stuff, and things shift where before it was the career, before it was not the family, you know, and then the values and the career shift. And you want to do, if you're going to do movies and do things, I want to do stuff that's a little more vulnerable, a little more touching. Because to answer your question about John Kreese, John Kreese is fully capable of doing that once he finds the answers. You know, he's got to really see, and it gets in season, the third installment, all of that is thrown at him and he can't help but understand, you know. So he is capable of understanding, but here's a man who's wrapped up in his viewpoints of life, you know, his way or no way, and is slowly learning that maybe you go six of one, half, you know, balance it out. And he's learning. Oddly enough, he's learning about balance, which he professed that he knew more about balance in the dojo than anybody, you know. And now he's learning about balance in life, which is what it's all about.
I was laughing, though. Sort of, you know, we suspend our reality, you know, suspend our belief or whatever for shows. But I took it the other direction. I thought, man, why is this guy so interested in this dojo at this point in his life? He could have turned into a supervillain any point in the last 20 years and, you know, tried to take over the world in a different kind of movie, but has just stayed hyper-focused on this little dojo world, you know, and thank goodness he has, because, you know, it's been a great series. But I did, I had to step aside and have that laugh as well.
But you got to remember that, you know, when he took over an episode in season three, when he takes the dojo from Billy, I don't think he planned to take the dojo. At least I, in my backstory, when I sat with him in season two and all that, I didn't plan on taking away the dojo. I wanted to share it with him. But then he started dealing with Miyagi-Do and shifting, people getting hurt in fights. And, you know, this didn't happen under my watch. Would never have happened under my watch. So he had to take away the dojo. But I don't believe in my backstory in my head. I didn't plan taking it away because it was Johnny Lawrence. And I love Johnny Lawrence. He's my son. Why would I want to take away the dojo? But, you know, now all of a sudden Cobra Kai is going down the wrong direction. I've got to save the day, you know. And nothing's more important than Johnny Lawrence and Cobra Kai. The concept of Cobra Kai, and the concept of Cobra Kai won in the balance sheet, you know, more than my love for Johnny Lawrence. And maybe Johnny Lawrence will come around, you know, that's what I thought also.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Martin Cove.
So it ends, sort of, and then the movie comes up. I was talking to Jacob about that, just asking his thoughts. It's a, you know, because as we've been told so far, the next movie that Ralph and everybody's doing, Cobra Kai's not a part of it, which is sort of odd to me. It's just sort of odd to me because Cobra Kai has made sure that everything is sort of a part of everything. What's your feeling on that? As fans, I think we all like it to be nice and tidy. You know, everything's connected.
Yeah. Well, that was a choice made. You know, Robert Kamen didn't write the script, and he wrote, you know, all three and wrote brilliance. You know, and he helped the writers with Cobra Kai and gave them their blessing. He assisted them, and they're all good friends, Josh Hayden and Robert Kamen. And he wrote a musical. I went to see it in St. Louis, the premiere of Karate Kid as a musical, and it was wonderful. And it just got a delay in release because of this movie coming out in May, you know, the one that Ralph's in. But I don't know, you know, I very few of us were privy to anything of what this movie's even about. You know, I remember having a wonderful time with my kids and Will Smith and everybody in his movie. And he was very concerned about, was he loyal to us from our experience of the three films? And he was. But it was still odd to see No Mercy being said in Japanese as a subtitle, you know? And it was just, you know, it was a fish out of water, but, you know, it took place in Japan, so it didn't have the American values. And it made money, it did well, and it was a decent movie. On this picture, I don't know. You know, it's kept under wraps pretty well. I haven't talked to Ralph about it. I will, you know. Because Ralph and I talk, you know, a lot because he had a book. And he wrote his book himself. And, you know, he told me. And when I did Dancing with the Stars, I called him and said, tell me about the show. He says, oh, it's good. It's good. You'll have a fun time. It was the hardest work I ever did in my life. I mean, I voided out his conversation. His support was good to a certain point. He went 10 episodes, I went 2. And I only went 2 because my knee was blowing up like crazy. And they didn't care. they just didn't care, you know? So, but we haven't had a chance to talk about the movie. And we talk a lot about the book. And there's such a big following, you know? So it's a sequel of sequels, you know? And it'll be terrific. You know, I'm sure. Will it answer any questions about Cobra Kai? I doubt it. It'll answer some questions probably about maybe Miyagi might get thrown in there, references, but I don't know. You know, I really don't know. It all happened so quickly. And I think they shot it up in, I don't know where, I think they shot in Atlanta or Canada. I don't remember. But Ralph, you know, went off for about 10 days, did it. And that was it. None of us were invited to come and play. So, you know, when they don't invite me, it's okay because I know why. They're inviting trouble. So I just take it for granted. It's okay. I don't get it. You know, because there were just some things that people write about that they think they know the answers about a character. And it's not right. Because I do these backstories, especially in the show. I didn't do that many backstories with my character in the movies because John Avildsen just wanted one dimension. He wanted just tough guy. Every time I smiled, he'd walk up to me and says, I don't want the Marty Cove twinkle. He says, I just want death. And as a result, John Kreese wasn't happy when his kids won. He wasn't happy when his kids lost. He was always in this indecisive sense of what's best for the dojo, what's best for me. It was a whole different deal, but people loved it. People loved to dislike that character. And I don't know where that venom came from. It was in my body, you know, 1983 venom. I don't know, you know.
Well, you've worn it well. I mean, to hold that demeanor, within a character for that long. But then, to also have that freedom to get out and doing all these projects that you're talking about. I mean, that's exciting. Like, I've enjoyed, obviously, this entire run for this character, as so many people have. But hearing you can hear you can see that twinkle in your eye and your voice light up when you're talking about, these other projects and the Westerns and the comic. I think it's going to be exciting to see these things that you do next. I guess there's got to be a little bit of freedom about putting Kreese back on ice.
Yeah, it's interesting you call it freedom. I guess it is interesting. You know, the heritage that came with, that comes out of, that becomes a heritage out of the series, because it's so popular. I was at a meeting last night of all the different, a lot of political people in Nashville. And my friend just took me, it was a fundraiser. I never go to these things, but I was there. Probably 50 people, all politicians, 40 of them I took pictures with. They were like, these are very, straight people in the sense of that most of their time is not spent in front of the television, most of it, unless their kids drag them. And they loved this guy. They loved him because of his moral fiber. They loved him because he was the ideal politician of yesteryear. That had the moral fiber that wouldn't. It was Teddy Roosevelt. It was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He would not, he just would not kowtow to something that was wrong and incorrect. In today's day and age, you don't get a lot of that. We're not in that space, And it's fun for that, for to see the evolution of the character going in that direction, going into what would have been if we were 100 years, 150 years earlier, the old West Marshal. I remember in Cagney and Lacey, my image and backstory was that he became a cop in the 14th precinct because he was the closest thing that Victor Rusbecki could do outside of being a sheriff in Tombstone. He couldn't be a sheriff in Tombstone or a marshal, so he became a cop in the 14th precinct in 1982, and kept a I kept a Winchester in my locker. I kept pictures of John Wayne because the fellow I rode with in the San Bernardino Police Department, my sort of my image that I was adopting, he had a Winchester lever action in his locker. He had pictures of John Wayne on the inside of his locker. He had pictures of John Wayne and the searchers underneath his glass top of his desk. I did the same thing. And it takes you into that great place, My whole character in season six was Ethan Edwards. I modeled him after Ethan Edwards, John Wayne's character in The Searchers. Prejudice, son of a bitch, tough guy. We're hunting my niece, Natalie Wood, so I can kill her because nobody should live with the Comanches for 5 years. They deserve to die. I mean, and then he becomes the hero at the end and takes her home. That's what Marty Cohen's about, It just that hard shell gets cracked and broken a little bit, and then I cry, and then I become, what do you got? What do you got that needs saving,
I love it. It's been a cool journey to watch. It's a long way from carrying couches for Rhoda, I'll say that, and trying to pick her up.
I remember I put my hand on her leg. I think I
She
squeezed her
moved
leg.
it cr right across, moved it right off. That's a
Right, yeah, that's funny. Yes, you got that. That's funny. Funny stuff.
Congrats on a hell of a run with Cobra Kai here. Again, it's been so much fun to watch Kreese and the whole gang continue the stories. And seriously, man, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it today. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, it's wonderful stuff. There's a show that I watch. There's a couple of good Westerns that I have been watching. But as a friend of mine, his name is Rob Word. He does Word on Westerns, and he's an authority on. I'm going to be in L.A. in November. I'm getting this the Western Walk of Stars in Newhall, and they give a saddle and your name, and then that evening is a ceremony, and you get, someone who's contributed to the Western. Which came out of nowhere, And then they show a movie of your choice that you were in as a Western character. So I chose the second, the first part of The Gambler 5, where I played Black Jack Ketchum. And he's a real life character. But it's, you know, it's nice to be, you know, just cited as someone who's contributing to something that they really love and would like the rest of the world, because Westerns have always come up, go down, go up, go down. Now they're riding the crest. And I think it's a great, I think it's the first American heritage of cinema. 1903, you know, Thomas Edison decided to make a Western, The Great Train Robbery. Could have made a gangster movie, could have made a drama, could have done anything with his invention, but made a Western, because everybody out there, it was the Western was a big frontier and was half of America. And I think we need to support that genre again and get back in it. Kevin did a great job with Horizon. And I think people expected a three-act Western, and they were a little surprised at the end where there wasn't any resolution to the characters. And that had to do with promotion and all. But part two of Horizon is wonderful. And he's a guy that just loves the West like I do, you know. So when I cried when I left White Earp. I didn't want to go home. I did not want to leave that set. That's how much fun I had. Good talking to you, man.
And my thanks to Martin Cove, Cobra Kai, its final season in motion right now on Netflix. Thanks to Marty. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here so you can get three interviews just like this one sent your way every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can grab us at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget to give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. where I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music there. Bonus interviews. Lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Emmylou Harris, The Rolling Stones. Fugazi, A Tribe Called Quest, Alison Moyet, Primus, Biba Doobie, Iron and Wine, Stillwater, Lydia Lovelace, Nathaniel Rateliff, Yola, Billy Strings, Bill Withers, Paul Simon, and my interview with Colin Greenwood of Radiohead. That's what you can hear when you tune in weeknights, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time. Consequence Podcast Network.
There's Rambo and there's Davy Crockett, Waste Paper Baskets, and there's a picture down there of me from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And yeah, these are all the, you know, action figures and stuff, and just wild.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Saving money on remodeling your home at Menards. Start your tile project off right with DentShield Tile Backer from Georgia Pacific. It's proven to protect against moisture in your walls and subfloors with a built-in water barrier, making it perfect to use in damp areas like kitchens and bathrooms. Plus, its easy-to-cut design makes installation a breeze. Save big on Georgia Pacific DentShield Tile Backer panels. On sale through March 2nd. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big.